Adair versus the INS. Mr. Noonan.
Good morning. James Noonan on behalf of the appellant in both these cases. May it please the court, counsel. We are before you on the appeal of two district court opinions, which at bottom were dismissed for want of subject matter jurisdiction. The issues, as your honors are aware, deal with the plaintiff appellants in this case, participation in the diversity visa lottery program. The government in the underlying cases, and as well as Judge Guzman in the Cadena case, determined that Section 242A2B of the INA, the Immigration Act, was a closed, a door-closing statute which precluded subject matter jurisdiction. In the appellant, the appellee's brief in this case, the government's brief in this case, they've backed off that position. So I submit that that issue is no longer before the court, and following the analysis of most of the district courts that have ruled on this issue, 242A2B does not preclude subject matter jurisdiction in cases like this where there hasn't been an adjudication of an application. A post hoc denial for the expiration of the fiscal year, which is what happened to all the plaintiffs in this case, is not a judgment as that term is defined. Given that the Section 242A2B, or any section of 242, does not preclude subject matter jurisdiction, I submit this court does have subject matter, or the district court does have subject matter jurisdiction over these claims.
Could we hold that without having to overrule any of our cases?
Yes, I submit you do. The two cases from this circuit that that even deal with Section 242A are the McBrady versus Perryman decision, and the other decision, Fornalak versus Perryman. The McBrady decision, I contend, is not applicable for basically the same reasoning as the government uses in its appellee brief and as the district court opined, which is that there has not been an effective denial or an effective adjudication of the underlying application. The McBrady decision, the way I read it and the way that Judge Gottschall read in the lower court, is that in that case there was an effective denial because the plaintiff applicants filed their applications too late. And the government was duty-bound to deny them on the tardiness issue. Here we don't have any of those circumstances. Here we have a denial. As the plaintiffs have done everything that they were statutorily and regulatorily obliged to do, and because of the, and solely because of the running of the fiscal year, the government issued these post hoc denials. In that sense, I contend that the McBrady decision is an opposite, and the door closing statute of 242A2B would not apply. The district courts do have jurisdiction to hear these claims under the mandamus statute. There is no question that the appellants in the lower court have a clear right to the relief sought. The 1255 adjustment of status application require the adjudication of these applications. Again, in my brief, I cited several district court cases that have found just that. And tied up in that issue is also the government's duty to process those applications. We contend that the...
In those district court cases you've discussed, did the government then process the claim?
In three of the cases, two of the cases that discussed in our brief, in the Pineschew versus INS case from this district, as well as the Marchetta case from this district as well, the government processed the claim and issued a visa.
That was after they had refused to, and so they did react to the court's admonition to proceed in process, and they did it.
That's correct. In the other lower court district cases, U versus Brown, the same thing occurred. The court, after the expiration of the fiscal year, issued the visa as required by the district court, which to me is the issue that is the fact that I think cut the guns of government mootness argument and its exhaustion of administrative remedies, et cetera, all that. The fact is the government, when compelled to do so, has issued visas subsequent to the end of the fiscal year. And for that reason, I contend that the mootness discussion, the mootness argument that has been raised in response to these type of claims is a non-issue. The issue is not moot. As your honors are aware, the issue of mootness is when an issue becomes moot when there's nothing that the court can give to the plaintiff. Here, the court can give the plaintiff the relief it seeks, the proper adjudication of their visa petition. And again, I cite to the two cases of Pineschew and Marchetic from this district where the government was obliged and in fact did just that.
Did the court in those cases make any findings as to why the visa had not been issued during the statutory period?
In the Pineschew case, I was actually counsel for plaintiff in both those cases. In the Pineschew case, the reason for the denial of, sorry, the reason for the failure to process within the fiscal year was driven by the government's waiting for fingerprints from the INS, or from the FBI. They didn't get them from the FBI in time, so they used that as an excuse not to process the application. In Marchetic, it was clearly an administrative oversight. Somebody had misplaced Mr. Marchetic's application. The fiscal year expired. He went to get a green card, and they said no green cards are available.
Would you have to show some kind of fault or negligence on the part of the government in order to get relief, in your view?
I think you would have to show government inaction, certainly government inaction, because what we're seeking here is mandamus relief. We're asking the district court to compel the government to execute and discharge its ministerial duties.
They do it. Actually invite more people to apply for this than they have slots.
Absolutely. Right? Significantly more than our visa numbers available. And interestingly, for the fiscal year 1998, of the 100,000 people applied for the 55,000 visas, the government, and I think the circumstances are compelling, they only issued 51,000 visas. So there were 4,000 visas left over, and one is compelled to ask why there were so many visas left over. I think the answer is self-explanatory.
Are you contending that if they had issued the 55,000 as opposed to the 51,000, they would be obligated to the other part of that 100,000?
No, I don't. I think effectively what these plaintiff appellants want was the government to process their application within the fiscal year. If the government ran out of visa numbers prior to the end of the fiscal year, that would be the end of it. The government neither processed the application nor ran out of visa numbers before the end of the fiscal year, and we contend that we're entitled to the relief.
So your contention is, in other words, that all you are asking is that the mandate of Congress be fulfilled and that Congress wants the available numbers to be used?
Yes, correct. That's what we're seeking.
Who sets the available numbers?
Congress.
Does Congress said it was 55?
Congress said that, I believe, in connection with working with the Attorney General when they try to set the diversity visa lottery program is set so that they can invite more applicants from underrepresented countries, and that changes regularly. So I think in communication with the INS and the Attorney General, Congress will set those numbers.
But is it by a matter of statute that the number is set?
Or for each given year, I submit that it's done by the regulations of the INS with in connection with the Attorney General.
But it is a regulation.
Yes.
So what you're really doing is saying we want the regulation complied with.
Well, we want. I mean, again, ultimately, if the applications are processed within the fiscal year and there are no visa numbers available, that's the end of the story. We're not asking Congress, or we're not asking the Attorney General to raise the numbers of visas available for a given fiscal year. It's just that if the visa numbers are available and our application is properly processed within the order that it receives them, those visas should be available to us.
Do you have any way of knowing whether your client in this case, your clients in these cases, would have gotten some of the leftover numbers, or would have they been, would have they have been part of the excess?
No, I don't know that, and nor do I know that even our clients would have been approved. I mean, there may have been something in their background or something but we never got to that point because the government just fiscal year ended and.
Would you have the grounds for trying to find out where you stood in the queue? Let's say 55,000, Mr. Newman, were issued, and so the number was honored, and your folks had applied in due course and within the appropriate time frame. Would a suit against the government lie? Or mandamus to establish why your folks didn't, why they were in the 45,000 and not in the 55,000?
Well, I think given the fact that that it's my clients who are the ones who filed suit to compel the government to issue the visas would effectively move them up in the application process. So if there were, assuming that the district court granted the application and assuming it was done within the fiscal year, we would be the first ones in queue for the remaining 10 or 5,000 visas that are available. But other than that, I have no way of knowing where we stood in the queue because, the applications were denied post hoc.
So the gravamen of your complaint really is that after the INS sets by regulation the number of these things it can issue, you don't think the bureaucracy ought to be able to sit on its hands and say, glad to know we got that regulation. We don't think we're just going to take our sweet time on this.
Absolutely. Given the logic of the underlying district court opinions and the logic the government employs in this brief, it doesn't have to do anything, those visa applicants. It doesn't have to issue one visa
if the government
or profits one application.
The government has a diversity program, and like with so much with immigration, it deals with numbers. Why does it have a time frame? In other words, if we're to admit 55,000 folks, because that's a number that Congress decides on, what are we to make of this time issue?
The government addresses it in its brief, and I don't have any basis to dispute it. But it's basically that they analyze what their needs are for immigration on a year by year basis. And I believe it's nothing more than that. That each year they determine how many visas they want from how many different countries, and they work some formulaic computation and come up with a different number. My understanding is that the number is different or can be different for each fiscal year.
Yeah, but the very fact that Congress sets a fiscal year parameter to it, what should one make of that? I guess that's my question. Is that a mandate to the INS? They must, assuming there are enough applicants, they must complete their work in a year?
Well, unfortunately, neither the regulations or statutes use that term must,
right,
or shall. But we contend by setting the number of visa applicants at the given year and also indicating that the fiscal year for the issuance of those visa numbers expires in the fiscal year, there is a duty, I believe, on the government to process those. And to process those up until the time when all the visa numbers are used, and to process those prior to the expiration of the fiscal year. Otherwise, both the Congress's mandate and the regulations can effectively be ignored with impunity by the INS. They, again, based on the logic employed here, they don't have to do anything. They can sit on their hand and issue no visa, and process no application, wait for the fiscal year to expire, throw them in the garbage and saying denied. And there's no oversight here in terms of, certainly no remedy to my.
Yeah, but the other end of that point. But the other end of that argument is, though, while they either could do or shouldn't do that, is that they must do it. Your argument within a year. You're saying,
yes,
they must do it.
Yes.
All 55,000 must be issued.
Must be used and used within a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, why is the number set?
Do you want to reserve some time?
Yeah, I don't know. Is that
yeah,
time up? Okay. I'll reserve my minutes for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
All right. Ms. Gordon.
Good morning. May it please the court, Michelle Gordon for the appellee's defendant in this case. This case involves and implicates the Attorney General's administration of the diversity visa program under the Immigration and Nationality Act. Therefore, if the court determines that the case is not moot because the relief sought in the complaint has been granted or because there is no effective relief that can be granted, then the court should dismiss the case for failure to exhaust administrative remedies. Further, there...
Don't I understand that in prior occasions the district judge has entered an order after the time and said, go ahead and process, and you did?
Counsel does state that appropriately, Your Honor, but the point in
well,
the
is
case
it true?
Is whether... that is true. That is true, Your Honor.
Well, then why is it moot, then? If you can do it, then why can you say you can't do it?
Well, it's moot because...
You've done it.
I understand that, Your Honor. But it's moot because the issue in this case is whether or not the defendant should be judicially compelled to do so, as opposed to whether or not they
Well, you were judicially compelled with the other two and did it. Why did...
But that doesn't...
You don't mind doing it voluntarily. You just don't want anybody to tell you what to do. Is that it?
Well, that doesn't address the fact, Your Honor, that under the regulation, the diversity visa numbers that are set aside for a particular fiscal year expire
right.
at the end of
I understand, but that happened in the other cases we're talking about.
Well, that's
it?
True, but even but the way those cases, counsel doesn't go into how those cases might have been factually distinguishable, and
no, he didn't. But he did say, however, that it happened. That year had expired, and if your theory is correct, there was nothing he could do about it. But you did it, and you granted the visa.
Well, did you force exhaustion in those cases, Ms. Gordon?
Did we force exhaustion?
Well, I mean, was that the argument advanced that you lost? In other words, you're advancing exhaustion here, right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
That they should wait. Until told to leave and then raise it at that point.
Where they can raise all of the claims and where they can raise all the claims that arise under the INA.
Right, right. That's a little more challenging time to raise it than before, but I appreciate the argument. But I guess, following up with Judge Bauer said, has the INS... demanded exhaustion in other settings.
Well, we have set forth the argument in every other case that exhaustion of administrative remedies serves the plaintiffs or serves the purpose of the statute in these cases, in that the claims that are raised here can be raised in administrative proceedings, and because the claims arise under the Attorney General's and the Department of State's administration of the Diversity Visa Program, the immigration judges and the board should be allowed to address these questions and these arguments in the first instance. It would lead to a better created record for further judicial review, and I might add that there can be further judicial review in the Court of Appeals on a petition for review for the claims to be raised at that point. Therefore, exhaustion in the interests of all prudential concerns is appropriate in this case. Furthermore, there's no reason, the plaintiff's claims fail to state a claim here. There is no duty to adjudicate these applications within a specific period of time. Congress could have set a limit, but it did not. Furthermore, that with respect to any allegations of delay in this case, delay should be addressed, or the period of time that it takes for the INS to adjudicate these applications should be addressed in a broad context. With consideration for the duties that are imposed by statute here, there is none with respect to the INS's adjudication of the application, and with respect to the rights that are involved. And here we're talking about applications for discretionary relief for which there is no particular right or entitlement. There's also no right or entitlement to a visa. Furthermore, the procedure here is a very random procedure.
Yeah, but when you create this lottery system, you create something of worth, don't you?
You do create something of worth, but it's a benefit. And that's why it's important to understand how the lottery process works. The way that it works here is individuals, in the very beginning, apply to even be randomly selected. Once they have applied, they're then randomly selected. And then once they're selected, they're told that, look, we have more people than we have available diversity visa numbers. So you are not guaranteed a diversity visa in this instance. And what that demonstrates is that this is not a process that creates any rights or entitlements. It is a purely discretionary process. It creates or it gives rise to a benefit.
Well,
certainly not a right or...
Excuse me, Ms. Gordon. Would you challenge then Mr. Noonan's position that under that approach the government could issue no visa despite Congress setting up the program?
Well, in the extreme sense, I guess the government could take that position, but then I think what we're talking about is where does the duty extend, or how far does the duty go? And the duty goes as far here as not violating the statute or not making any determinations on any unconstitutional basis. And that there is no record in this regard that any of that has happened. Again, the statute does not tell the INS to adjudicate these applications in a particular period of time, and that's for good reason. The INS has a number of tasks and a number of responsibilities. These particular set of applications for adjudication of, or adjustment of status are just only represent one subset of even a larger subset.
Well, we've all got a lot of work to do. But the fact of the matter is Congress did it when it put the program in place, expected a certain number of people who are underrepresented in the immigration pool into this country would be admitted to the country. And what you're telling me now is that some bureaucrat in the INS can say, heck with Congress, that's just not going to happen, I'm going to sit on these, and there's nothing we can do about it.
Well, that's not, those aren't the facts in this case. As a matter of fact, what
that can happen, right, under your interpretation of the of the situation. I suppose some bureaucrat decides, I don't like Lithuanians, or whoever it is.
Well,
and
no.
Says, no, I'll just sit on that. I don't like the look of that. How many months we got to go? I'll just sit on that one.
I understand the court's concern. No, that cannot happen, because that would clearly be, that would be a violation in constitutional terms. And
what if he didn't say anything about the Lithuanian? He just quietly put it in his desk drawer. Didn't even mention there was a Lithuanian involved.
Well, Your Honor, that would be a situation of inaction, but again, the facts in this case don't show that there was any inaction. The district court's opinion went through and showed that there were even interviews that were scheduled in these particular cases, and that
some
of the plaintiffs...
Some of them were scheduled for after the period, though.
That is correct, Your Honor.
That would seem to dovetail with Judge Bauer's earlier question as to whether or not this thing's really moot. If you're scheduling interviews after the period, it sounds like you can still do something.
But that doesn't get around... Well... But that doesn't get around that under the statute, and earlier in the plaintiff's argument, it was raised, why does Congress have this particular provision in place for why visa numbers expire at the end of the fiscal year? And the reason for that is that the administration of the statute is designed, and I think this is demonstrated under INA Section 203 of 8 U.S.C. Section 1153, that the administration is based on a fiscal year to fiscal year basis, and that there have to be particular determinations that are made from year to year with respect to low rates of immigration, high rates of immigration, and which regions will be eligible to participate in the country, and the allocation and the distribution of those visas on that basis. So that is the reason why Congress has determined that the visas expire at the end of the fiscal year, and that when that fiscal year expires, nobody will be able to obtain any further visas on that basis. And if any court could come in and change that or direct the INS every time something like this happened, to direct the INS to go ahead and to adjudicate the applications and make the Department of State go ahead and issue a visa, that would frustrate the orderly administration of the program.
Yeah, but what it comes down to then is, are you not suggesting to us, and I mean this respectfully, and I really appreciate difficult tasks INS lawyers have across the country and witness the challenge you have here. Are you saying, though, when Congress sets this, it presumes good faith in the INS and it says do the best you can? Is that what you, is that the heart of the argument, that we presume you're going to work at it, and is that what we should accept as the government's position here?
Well, I think so, but I also think that it's more in the sense that it does set a duty that says that you cannot, the INS can't violate the statute, but there is no statutory guideline here with respect to the amount of time it takes, and that you cannot do anything that would be in violation of the Constitution.
But you have this problem of inviting the application. It comes in within a prescribed period, and I appreciate your. We've got the issue of what it is that you've got a right to, what's the benefit. But it comes within, and the INS is, let's say, working as hard, as applied as many resources as it can, and it's also up against a constant reevaluation of what the new number is going to be for the new fiscal year. Don't courts, and certainly more importantly, the applicants need some sense of of guidance as to how orderly the process is. I mean, it witnessed what we have in these two cases here.
Well, certainly. I think that the court can express a concern in that regard, but the problem here is that, as I said before, Congress has designed the program in a particular way with respect to the fiscal year, and the INS is charged with the task of, as you said, doing the best that it can. But when the court can order a specific form of relief that would direct the INS to act in a particular way that would frustrate the administration of the program and also interfere with the INS's docket.
Okay, why don't we reduce it to maybe some specifics and see if you think this would fit in.
Okay.
Let's say within a given year, you issue 5,000 less, you know, 50 rather than 55, and you have queued up appropriately 500 that have not been processed just because the year ended. Is it unfair to ask the INS, in compliance with the mandate of the statute, whatever one interprets it to be, that they ought to run those through with I mean, so that there be a carryover on the...
Yes, Your Honor. Well, is this assuming that it's within the fiscal year?
Yeah, well, that everything got in the fiscal year. In other words, the applicant did all he or she could.
Okay.
It's just that the INS didn't have the resources to complete the program. Should there be a rollover, let's say? Should we interpret the year as just getting it in within the year? No,
that would be contrary to the statute. The statute says that the numbers expire at the end of the fiscal year. There is no available visa, and therefore...
Now how did you get the other ones, the ones we were talking about earlier?
Through special circumstances, Your Honor. And there's one exception.
Smoke and mirrors. You did it, though. Yeah.
There was a remedy that was provided, but
there's a great equity thing that's not in it. There's always an angle. And if you find out what the angle is, you've got all your equitable solutions right before you. I just want to know what the angle was. You said you can't be done, but it was done.
It was done, but that doesn't mean that a court should impose that type of relief in every single circumstance, because if every individual could come forward and make that argument, that
means... Who knows where it'll all end?
Well, that's true, Your Honor, yes. Well,
has the department, the Justice Department, taken... this position in every circuit where the issue has come up?
Which position? The position?
The one you're advancing this morning. In other words...
We haven't had... This is the first circuit where the case has come up, Your
That's,
Honor.
Well, I haven't found any, but I was wondering whether you've got something in process somewhere else that...
Not to my knowledge right now.
And this policy that you're advancing, I don't want to question... Where it emanates, this is at the level of the head of the civil division. Is it?
Your Honor,
this is a case that could be of some moment for the INS.
It is an official policy with respect to the INS and with respect to the Department of State, and both of the agencies' administrations of the program. I also want to point out that the exhaustion of administrative remedies also allows the petitioners to raise these claims again in judicial proceedings, in a petition for review in the Court of Appeals. And that for that reason, there is an alternate remedy that's available to the plaintiffs to renew their claims and to pursue them in administrative proceedings. If there are no more questions, I'll end there.
All right. Thank you, Gordon. Mr. Noonan.
I have found no other circuit court opinions which have addressed the issue. There is, however, a matter up before the 11th Circuit now on appeal in a case that cited in my brief, the district court opinion decided by Niaga versus Ashcroft, which in that opinion, following Pineschew and the other cases, held that and compelled the government to issue the visas after the expiration of the
system. They appealed. And so the government's appealing now.
Correct.
Have you had an opportunity to look at their brief in that case? Have you?
No, I haven't. That brief hasn't been filed yet. I'm attorney for the plaintiff in that case as well.
Well, you'll be the first one to have the brief then, other than the government.
Yeah, I think so. just a couple points, Your Honors, made. with respect to Judge Flom's contention on the underlying Pineschi and Marchetta cases that the government advanced its exhaustion argument. And yes, they did. And it was rejected for the simple but I think very compelling reason that what the remedy that plaintiff seeks is to adjudicate their application, not to issue them a green card, not to fight in the removal proceedings, but to process their application. That's what they've asked the district court.
What they said in answer to that was even if they processed your application, they couldn't give you the green card because if the time has expired, there's no time for green cards. But
that's the utility argument. And if we were to do that, the government
position would be? Back to the personal, how come they did it before?
Right.
How prejudiced would you be if you had to raise it at the exhaustion level? If exhaustion were applied and you have to raise it at the end?
Well, very prejudiced, for several reasons. First, at least two of the plaintiffs in this case are overseas, so they would never be subject to a removal proceeding. There would be no forum for them to raise these claims. Second of all, my reading of Section 245A5, I believe, is the provision where it deals with these administrative remedies. In order for a plaintiff, like the plaintiffs here, to take advantage of that is if the application was denied during the fiscal year and then the government initiated removal proceedings within the fiscal year, could the application be renewed? We don't have either of those circumstances here. So those remedies are typically unavailable to the applicant.
I'm going to have to ask you to come to a concluding remarks.
I have no further questions.
Well, I don't want to cut you off. I mean, if you had one last
thought. No, I think I've covered your questions, unless you have any further questions on it.
Apparently not.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Gordon. Case is taken under advisement.